Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's November 23rd, 2012. It's Thanksgiving weekend, and you're listening to the best PokerCast, not on a ship. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long, and everybody should be ecstatic this week, Chris.
Wait, let me get the wind machine going over here with the fans blowing. Hang on. Okay, what?
They should be ecstatic that I'm not on an island this week, so. You know, hey, we tried. I tried. You had nothing to do with it, so I'm not going to drag you down into my audio nightmare, but... We gave it the old college try last weekend, and it didn't work out. But for those of you that actually really thought that what we were talking about might be interesting, Poker Geek actually posted his version, his recording, which apparently is much better. You know, I hate to say the iPhone is better than anything, because I hate that. Mm. But his iPhone is probably a better recorder than our company-issued handheld recorders.
Get on board, buddy.
But regardless of the audio quality last week, we had a fantastic cruise as always, and not going to dedicate yet another entire show to it. But there's some little tidbits that came out of this massive journey I was on the last 10 days, and chat a little bit about it. First of all, we started out the one of our great sponsors for this cruise, Dover Downs Hotel Casino up in Dover, Delaware. Invited us up for a little for their tournament that they had the night before the cruise, and you know, we promoted the hell out of that on the show. And so I get there, and Dan from AC, remember Dan from AC?
Yep, he was our silent partner.
Exactly. Fans of the show remember him from our last Atlantic City meetup. We slapped a patch on him, and this woman came up to him, and next thing you know, she's thinking that he's the owner of the company, and he's just playing right along. Yep. And it was absolutely great. Perfect, right?
Yeah.
Now, part of that, though, was, you know, we always ask people, what do you do for a living as part of the conversation? He's like, I'm a pilot. And we're like, yeah, sure you are.
I never doubted you, Dan.
Yeah, and I'm an astronaut. And so he shows up and he's like, you know what? I am going to prove to you guys that I'm a pilot. And he whipped out this business card that I'm sure he just got from the Kinko's printer that said, Dan, pilot. I'm like, okay, not going to do it, buddy. I need more. And he's like, all right, I'm bringing you gifts. And he brought out some of those. He's like, these are the amenity kits we give our first class passengers. A little pouch full of, you know, all the kind of stuff you need to just ignore all your passengers, right? And then he said, you know, because you came all the way up here, and Chris didn't, I'm going to give you this. And he gave me a little pair of slippers.
Aw.
Emblazoned with his airline. And we can't announce the airline on the air. One, because I'm still not sure he actually works for him. But two, they're not a paid sponsor. So
yeah, two. I mean, here's the deal. I mean, you know, all that says is that he flew first class on some airline. And he kept the stuff and gave it to you. Doesn't necessarily mean he's an actual pilot. I mean, Leonardo DiCaprio in Catch Me If You Can made a freaking living doing it by taking the stickers off of models and putting them on fake checks. And everyone thought he was a pilot and even paid him for it. So just because he gave you a little pair of slippers and a... You know, that doesn't necessarily make him a pilot. So we're going to need some more proof. Like, you know what? He's going to have to give us free flights on his airline and then come out of the cockpit and say, hey, see, I'm flying.
You know, that's what I said. You know, hey, you want to prove it? You pull that bad boy jet right up to my house, pick me up for the next Ante Up Poker Tour event. Then we'll talk.
That's right.
But he does. He is dogged. I give him that, Chris.
Yeah.
And after he left the event, he called our hotline just to one more time assure us that he really is truly a pilot.
Hey, Chris and Scott, it's Dan, the pilot, also known as the silent partner. Just calling on my way home from the meetup at Dover, Delaware, and just wondering when the next meetup is. Because this one I actually made the final table, They paid 10 to get 190 people, and then we did a chop. So picked up a nice little chunk of cash. Too bad I couldn't get any of Scott's chips or those cool sunglasses. But anyway, I had a great time, and enjoyed talking to Scott. So hope the crews went well, and let me know next time you guys are in Atlantic City.
And, of course, he has to rub it in the fact that he cashed.
That's right. He's a good player. We had some good conversations when we played together up in AC, and I could tell that, you know, he knew what he was doing at the table, so I always enjoy his company, too.
Yeah, it was a great tournament, and actually there's a hand from it that we're going to talk about later on in the show when we talk to Lee Childs. But also, I get to meet our Mid-Atlantic Ambassador Michael Young, great guy, doing a lot of good work up there. He is stoked about the Maryland Poker coming online next year.
Yeah.
Had a long conversation. Actually, everybody up there was talking about it, so... very good to see him. But really, we were up there to get on the cruise, and first time out of Baltimore, and we got a lot of new sailors. Sailors?
Yeah.
Passengers.
Passengers.
I guess they're technically sailors, right?
I guess, yeah.
No stripes, but... And that's always exciting to me, because I like to meet new people. And it turns out, Chris, we had a lot of what I call the silent majority from the Antioch Poker Cast.
Really?
You know, these people will say, hey, man, I love the show. I've been listening to it from the beginning. I never write in. I never call the hotline. I never do this, I never that. But I wanted to let you know that I love listening to it. And so happy to be on the ship and meeting you and Chris. And, of course, you know, I had to pull out a picture out of my wallet so they could meet you. But
I know you keep a picture of me in your wallet, buddy. I know.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Three or four of them, different poses. Just depends on the crowd.
I still regret the leopard skin underwear, but you really had your heart set on it.
But a couple that just had me cracking up the entire week. Tommy, he brought his whole home game posse with him.
Awesome.
These guys were hilarious. So we played Pot Limit Omaha 8 most of the trip. And when they were in the room almost the entire time, if there wasn't a game going, they were sitting there playing Big Deuce.
Oh, yeah. I played Big Deuce.
Yeah, just the three or four of them until a game got started. And then enough people came in and like, all right, let's go. So we could always count on them. They were a lot of fun. And then Rich from Utah came all the way from Sandy, Utah.
How's that possible?
Well, you know, they have, I think part of it was a horse and buggy at those wagons and stuff.
I thought for sure our show and our website would be totally blocked to everyone in Utah. How could he even find out about us? That's remarkable.
The great guy. We had a lot of fun with him. He actually cashed in every single tournament. And he picked up the nickname Min Cash Rich. I mean, we had a bounty tournament, which we'll talk about a little bit later, too. And he chopped second and third, earned not one bounty the entire trip, or the entire tournament.
Wow.
That takes skill, I think.
Yeah, that's hard to do.
Yeah. But, yeah, I had a lot of the, and there are several other podcast listeners, too. Very nice to see those folks. Of course, in our... folks that have been on the show all the time that we had on last week, you know, Thietza and Big Guru and Poker Geek. But yeah, it was a good turnout for the PokerCast and the Up Nation out there, so we really appreciate that. We played a couple different games this time. I did mention we got 1-2-5 PLO-8 going almost every night, and never played that, actually, live, and had fun, lost a crap ton of money, but that's all part of the fun. One funny story about that. I had the lock low, and my other opponent had the lock high, and he checked to me on the turn, and on the river he checked again, and I put in a pot size bet, and he called, and he's like, you know, dude, I was just trying to keep the rake low. And he's like, I guess that doesn't work with you, does it?
That's funny.
And I'm like, nope, we're going to have max rake every hand I'm in, sir.
Oh, that's funny.
And then, you know, we did briefly mention last week, they got the six card going. Players loved it. House hated it, but definitely a fun game. And then the last night, I feel bad. I was busy. You know how busy the last night is.
Yeah.
Running around getting stuff done. But they got a 5-10 limit ho game going.
Oh.
They had played at 3-6 earlier in the week. Played a lot of 4-8 Omaha high low limit, too. But the last night, they had 5-10 ho going. And I got there right, you know, 15 minutes before the room closed when I realized they're playing it. I'm like, oh, thanks for calling. I would have been dead money. But I was glad to see that game got going, and I think people really enjoyed it.
Wow, 5-10 ho. That's never happened before on a cruise.
No. So good variety of stuff.
Cool. And I'm fully aware now why Tommy and his gang showed up, because they knew that if they didn't get you to play 1-2-5 PLO-8, they'd have like three or four buy-ins from you easy. smart guys, I think.
Yes, absolutely. We had a couple fun tournaments, too, and then I mentioned the last day we switched it to a bounty tournament. We hadn't done that before, but put $20 bounties on everybody's head. And people actually really liked it, I think. I think we're going to use that format on future cruises. And it was the best tournament I had, but there was another guy there that was just cleaning up. Now, of course, you know, Lee Childs was on the cruise, and like I said, we're going to talk to him later about this stuff, but he was one of Lee's students, even before he came on the cruise. And then, of course, he came with both the classes on the cruise. Just destroyed this bounty tournament.
Man.
There were, I believe, after re-entries, 31 entries. He ended up with, I believe, 15 bounties. And like I said, the second and third chopped at the end and took second and third money. So that would have been two more bounties he could have picked up. So theoretically, had it played out, he would have had 17 of the 31 bounties in this tournament. Plus his.
Oh,
so I guess that would be 18.
Yeah. Did you guys make it? See, I wasn't there. So did you guys make it so that when you were, if you made the final table, you got to keep your bounty, or did you keep the bounties going?
No. It was kill or be killed, man.
Oh, okay. Because that's usually the rule, is when you make the final table, you get to keep your bounty.
No, kill or be killed.
Pretty cool.
And Jim killed.
there were quite a few tournaments where I'm playing where I'm like, oh my god, I've knocked out like 20 people in this tournament. Why isn't this a bounty tournament? And yeah. He just happened to have one of those tournaments where it was a bounty. That's pretty cool.
And I'm generally not a fan of the bounty because, you know, you don't get a lot of bounties when you're a short stack ninja.
Yeah.
But I got a couple there, and then I was in a position to really put a hurting on Jim. I was second in chips, and he was first in chips, and I flopped a set, got it all in it with him at the top pair. And I'm like, yes. And if it would have held, and you know it didn't hold, had it held, I would have been a massive chip leader, and he would have had to fight to survive. And that was still with six or seven to go, I think. And of course, no, he was runner spade, you know, on it the hard way. Knocked me out. And he was knocking people out on the river all night. Poker Geek, he got knocked out. Poker Geek got it all in pocket aces. He had pocket kings and river to king.
Oh, my God.
I mean, he was running good, playing good, but also running good.
Yeah.
Yeah, both of those going together, that's a great thing. I finally got to play Open Face Chinese for the first time. I've been wanting to play it. People have been talking about it, and I haven't got to play it. And I played a couple hands on the cruise. And I'll tell you this, after I played the first couple hands, I was... We played normal Chinese later on, and not the same anymore. Gotta say, just not the same. I am a very quick convert to the open face version of this. And I was exchanging emails with our great sponsor at Smapsoft that you know, has the Chinese poker app, and he is just in love with it too. So I know they're working to get a version of that, but much fun, much more fun game. And so when we took the train home, we're on there for like, you know, 18 hours, right? So
yeah.
Wife and I have to actually pretend like we like each other at that point. And so she's got a deck of cards, and she's like, let's play something. And I'm like, gosh, I don't know what a good two-person card game is anymore. And I'm like, you know what? I can teach you open-face Chinese if you want. Half joking, right? She's like, all right. Taught her, like, in 5 minutes, hooked. We played for like six straight hours.
Oh, my God.
And it is just... fun game. I mean, I really love the fact that it's, as Steve at Smapsoft said, the puzzle aspect to it. It's not only just trying to get their Chinese poker hands, and obviously Laura had never played Chinese poker, so that part of the strategy didn't even exist to her, but she quickly understood that it's a puzzle, and you know, you don't want to foul your hand, and you know, where do you place your cards, so it's less likely you're going to foul your hand, but then also paying attention to your players and what they need and what they have out. There's a lot to think about. I think it's a good game. I certainly got the wife on board with it, so
that's cool.
And then my final story of the cruise before we go on, you know, I've been on what 5,000 cruises now, right?
Yeah.
And you know, we're just so busy on there. I mean, with the poker, and then occasionally, you know, trying to have some fun, entertain the wives, right? Too. So I have not gone to any of the cruise bingo sessions in quite a while. Now, bingo obviously is huge on cruise ships. You know, the average age of people there is 85, so they love playing the bingo, right? One of the Wi-Fi hotspots on the cruise ship, where I'm paying 65 cents a minute for internet, was in the lounge where the bingo was one day, right?
Right.
So I'm sitting there, and I'm, you know, firing off emails to you, and they're starting to sell the bingo cards, right? Chris, I cannot believe that bingo has gotten even lazier than it already has been.
What do you mean?
All right, now I want to preface this by saying I'm not hating on bingo, all right? The wife and I go to a bar once a week and play bingo there. It's a fun, relaxing little game, you know. You might win prizes, so not hating on it in the least, right?
Right.
But I think we can agree that it's not the most athletic of sports in the world, correct?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, essentially, some guy stands up there and goes, B11.
Yeah.
And you have to look on your card and see if there's a B11 and put a marble there, right?
Yeah.
Not a lot to it. And then you got to remember to go, chicken legs! Or whatever the little name is for the... That's really about it, right?
Yep.
Cruise ships now have found a way to make it even lazier. They are now selling these... Renting these bingo computers. You can go up there and you can buy the normal cards, right? At their greatly inflated rates. Or you can rent these machines at an even higher rate for the same thing. Take it back to your seat, and when the guy calls out B11, the computer automatically knows that it's B11 and marks it on your screen.
So you just sit there, and it fills it in for you?
Exactly.
So you can just show up, rent them, and then walk away, and then come back later and say, did I win?
Well, I guess you got to be there to go bingo.
Oh my God.
Sure, the next cruise is going to be an extra $5 for the machine to actually go bingo.
You have bingo.
Yes. I mean, I was floored by this. Seriously? That's crazy. A problem that needed to be solved?
That's crazy.
I think it takes the fun out of the game, too, you know?
What's the point?
Absolutely. That was just like a pull tab or a lottery ticket.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, half the fun is searching your cards, looking for the number to see if you got it and marking it and stuff. Not just telling you if you won or if you didn't. It's like just a plain old raffle then. Okay, yeah. Here, buy a raffle ticket and wait for your name to be called. In fact, don't wait for your name. We'll just come by and tell you you won or if you didn't. What a waste of time.
But, again, we had a great cruise. Sorry you couldn't make it. I know some of the podcast listeners really want to meet you, but they're going to have some plenty of other opportunities to see you because you're definitely going to be on the next one. So will Jonathan Little. That's going to be February 4th out of Port Canaveral. We are past our rate guarantee deadline now, so if you want to come, you better book ASAP to be sure we can still get you on the ship and get you the best rate we possibly can. And also, we're sailing out of Miami, New York City, and Tampa next year. And remember, you can get all the details, including how you can win your way on board at Dover Downs, Derby Lane, Tampa Bay Downs, Daytona Beach Kennel Club, and just announced Seneca Salamanca in New York. All those details are at antiupcruises.com.
Now, our hotline is 813-448-1120. And, you know, Scott, we're going to get something that we haven't had in a long time.
Congratulations. You filled out a contest entry form for our end-of-summer promotion for a Carnival, Norwegian, or Royal Caribbean cruise, and you were selected today. Please press 1 to speak to a Travel Services cruise agent to reserve your cruise, or press 2 to decline the offer and be added to our Do Not Call list. Press 1 now.
This is phenomenal.
Oh, my God.
I have always wanted to go on a cruise.
I can't believe this. How did they know we needed this?
I mean, we've been working so hard. I mean, you know, last week I was on the ship and trains. I really could use a vacation, and a cruise is the perfect thing. So
I think I have some time off February 4th. Maybe we can book one then.
We're going to have to play open-faced Chinese poker to see who gets it, though, right?
Okay.
Because I'm not rooming with you. Done that, been there.
Oh, man. And the best part was we didn't get to push 2 to opt out of it. So they're going to keep calling us, trying to give us this free cruise. I can't wait.
Oh, keep calling and calling.
All right. Don't forget, call 813-448-1120. Leave us a message. And if we use it, we'll give you something kind of cool. All right. We got a mailbag from Rodney Strickland. It says, I have a question on how best to approach this strange structure. There is a weekly tournament at a local room. It is a $20 initial buy-in. You get 3,000 chips. Optional dealer add-on for $5 is an extra 1,000. Also, you get one rebuy for 3,000, which you can use at any point, whether you have chips or not, before the final table, though. The rebuy is also $20. The initial buy-in is not rigged with all of the $20 going to the prize pool, but with the rebuy, 50% goes to the prize pool and 50% to the house. I was wondering if it would be a better idea to buy in for the 3K plus 1K and save the rebuy, or buy in for the 3K, 1K, and 3K and use the rebuy as soon as a tournament starts and just treat it like a $40 freeze-up. 15-minute levels starting at $25.50 with about 70 players, if that makes a difference. Interesting.
Yeah, and this is what I told him. You know, there are some players out there that just desire massive chip stacks to start with.
Yeah.
You know, the game depends on having as many chips as they possibly can. If you're that guy, by all means, we're talking $40 here. Go crazy. That would be my advice. I am not that person. I am what's called in the business a cheapo.
That's a technical term.
It is, it is. And here's the thing. When you tell me I can get into a tournament rake-free, I am going to take you up on that.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give the $20. Of course, I always like to make sure the dealer's taken care of, so I'll do the little add-on there. Actually gives you 25% more chips for less than 25% of the buy-in. So $25, I'm going to start with 4K. And then I also have the insurance of knowing if I take a bad beat or get sucked out on, I can rebuy at that point.
Right.
And at that point, I'm giving the house money. But right now, I'm going to start off at that 4K and see if I can run this bad boy to the end. Screw the house.
100% agree. I have nothing to add. Well, other than it's cool because if you don't do the rebuy, everyone else is doing the rebuy. And most of these people are rebuying because they're going broke first, probably.
True.
So you're literally starting with $25 and they're paying $45 to be at the same place as you. And that's it. They can only do it once. It's not like it's a real rebuy where people will keep rebuying because they want a ton of chips in the table.
Exactly.
It's only one more rebuy on your table per player. So you're getting a pretty decent deal there for $25 to just sit there and take a stab at it without having to pay anyone for that right. You know, you're paying it to your pool. That I love that idea, just not paying the rebuy. Not just because I'm cheap. Because I am. I'm the frugal one. That's the other technical term. But really, I mean, at the benefit of the extra 3,000, how much can it really be? If you got a decent starting – 4,000 is a pretty decent starting stack for $25.50.
Yeah, $25.50,
absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So what's the point? You know what I mean? Because you want a big stack like that so you can bust some people? You really got to get it all in. It's going to be – you know what I mean? To do that. So, and even then, if you did somehow get it all in and you made a mistake, you could rebuy then. So
yep.
Why not? I would not rebuy until I absolutely had to. Hopefully I'm not screwing any of our advertisers by saying this, but because I don't know where this room is, but I don't think it's one of our rooms. So.
Well, yeah, from the operator standpoint, I think it's an interesting tournament. You know, we've seen some places do this. I mean, some places do this with a free roll. You know, hey, come in. It's a free roll. They give you 1,000 chips or something ridiculous, right?
Right.
And then unlimited rebuys for $20, and they, you know, they take a piece out of that. Or even sometimes they don't take a piece out of that. They guarantee the free roll is going to pay $1,500 or something, and they know there's going to be enough people that are going to rebuy to make it a so they don't need anything.
Right.
It gets people in. So
right.
I mean, there is a some strategy involved here. the operator standpoint. But I've never quite seen this type though, where you've got the option, because I think this doesn't really make it enticing enough to me to do the add-on or the rebuy unless I absolutely have to.
Right.
You know, generally the idea is, particularly with the dealer add-on too, is you want to make it so it's an impossible decision for someone not to do it.
Right, or at least know that you can keep doing it, like in a real rebuy. This one's just a one-time rebuy for $3,000, that's it.
Yeah.
And it's just, to me, it's just not enticing enough and not economically worth it to me. I mean, $4,000 is plenty for me to get going in that tournament for $25.
Yeah, I think it would have to be maybe another 6K in chips for that before I'll be like, okay, that's a deal. I need to get in on that probably.
Yeah, and then at that point, you're ticking off all the people who paid $25 to get $4,000 when I could have paid $20 to make $6,000. It's more than the starting buy-in. Generally, it's never like that.
Right,
so then
right.
You're really just – now you're just creating rules to piss people off. So
yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't do it.
That would be my advice to the operator.
Me too.
Is make it a little more enticing for the cheapo, frugal crowd. Oh. All right, Roddy, we appreciate you emailing your question to podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and we're going to be happy to send you a classic tournament dealer button from tournamentbutton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built right into them. You can even customize them with your own photo or logo, and be sure to ask about the AntiUp logo version, and also use code AntiUp for free shipping when you order. And remember to send those questions to podcast@antiupmagazine.com, including your call to fours.
Call to Floor. We're flying solo on the Call to Floor this week. I'm very excited. We're going to – a little pressure on us, but I think we can handle it. Comes from Darren Michaels, who goes by Dazam on the forum.
Oh, is that what it is? I always only call him Dazman, but it's not Dazman.
Well, I don't know. According to the way you've spelled it on the file here, it's Dazam.
I just copy and paste it. That's how it does it. Dazam. All right.
I thought it was Dazman too, but just goes to show you.
It's
your
one
mind
of those schooner things. It's not a schooner. You know, you play tricks on your eyes, but Dazam is right.
Yeah.
But actually, I'm sorry. You're right. Dazam.
Dazam. Okay, he says, in a pub cash game, wow, a lot of these little local tournaments coming in today, that is self-dealt with the dealer doing nothing more than dealing the cards. We had a hand that reached showdown. One guy turns over the nut flush. The other guy, the owner of the pub, turns over fives, declares he only had trips, and tosses them toward the middle. I notice he really has a full house, but kept quiet. Another guy notices, but tells the other guy that he has a full house. There is a small argument, and the chips go into the guy with the go to the guy with the full house. The guy who sees the full house even says, in a casino, he wouldn't have been awarded the pot. The guy with the nut flush isn't happy, but doesn't say too much, but is still complaining to me a week later. I know the chip should have gone to the nut flush, but considering this is a self-dealt game in a pub with no dealer ensuring rules and procedures are being followed, how enforceable is this considering there is no central muck and the mucked cards are scattered around the table? Should the guy who told the other guy about the full house be penalized? Do I have a responsibility to speak up more? What was the best course of action, considering the same group play every week, and we don't want any bad feelings? You want me to take it, or you want to take it?
I'm going to start off by saying the problem here isn't who should be awarded the pot. The problem is here that there is not a central muck, and things aren't being done as close to a casino environment as possible. Obviously, I mean, most of these things need to be self-dealt, so that's fine. But I really think the problem is, the lesson to be learned here, and to go back to the pub, is to say, you know what? This became a stickier situation than it needed to be because we're just flinging our cards anywhere on the table.
Yeah.
Can we at least try to now make it the dealer's responsibility to have a nice, neat, tidy muck? It's not going to avoid this problem in the future, but it's certainly going to make it less likely, right? Mm-hmm. Now, on the rest of it, I mean, I'll let you take the rest of it. And
well,
when
you started to say what we needed is one central, and at first I thought you were going to say figure to be
that's
like,
true too.
But now there may have been a four person that they called over who would probably just be the owner of the bar league itself, not the owner of the pub, obviously, because he's in the hand, but who would have come over and made the decision to push the pot to the guy or the full house. I'm not sure what happened here, but if there isn't one, you need that. Now, to get past that, I don't necessarily think that the flush should have gotten the chips. If the full house is not mucked, and by mucked, I mean it's not touching any muck, and he didn't actually... Also, we've learned a bunch of times now in a lot of these where if the hand is retrievable, and everyone can clearly see that the hand's retrievable, and everyone knows he turned over his fives, he showed his full house, then I don't think that the net flush does get the money. I think that the guy with the full house gets the money. It's been happening. We've called it a million times on our show before where they can see the cards. They can perfectly retrieve them. Someone clearly saw the hand. They can identify the hand. And if they did that with this guy in his full house and they showed his full house, then he wins the pot. And as for him who said, you know, hey, you got a full house or he's got a full house, should he have been penalized? No. What was the rule at Beauvoir's? Rule 12 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Make sure a fair game, a square game is being dealt. It's your responsibility to speak up if you see an injustice or whatever the hell how it was worded. And that's what this is going on here. They go, no way, he's got a full house. It does affect the tournament. How do you know that the other guy, if he's telling the truth, we're not talking about some sort of angle shoot here where it can help a friend or not help a friend or whatever. This is the truth. Show the full house. Here's the full house. He does win. And it does affect the tournament because a guy who has a nut flush could have been a worse player, and it could have affected, you know, the outcome, or a better player, and it could affect the outcome. The way the game handed was that this guy had the best hand. He deserves the chips, and that's the way it should be called. So I don't think there was a mistake, and I don't think the guy should be penalized for pointing that out.
No, and if he tabled his hand, I mean, in a situation where there's no muck, I don't think the standard rules of touching the muck apply.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean that you should keep that. Again, I would, you know, clean up the muck. In fact, actually, what I always suggest to these folks, and I suggested to Dazam, was in a self-dealt, I think really the best thing in a self-dealt league is to make the dealer sit out when he or she is dealing. And focus on the dealing of the game, maintain the muck, make sure that the bets are correct. And then you have a somewhat impartial arbiter at the table at that point. Obviously, the dealer's still in the tournament, so not completely impartial. But at least in the hand, you know, there's never going to be a situation where the dealer's in the hand in the middle of a situation. That sounds a little weird, I know, but we've seen so many of these issues in self-dealt things that I think taking you out of the hand once a round is really the way to go.
And that's a great point. And it also ensures that, obviously, at this level, there probably aren't, but it ensures no cheating from the mechanic kind of dealer or something who looks at the bottom card before he deals or whatever it is that he's doing or something.
Well, he's not benefiting him.
He's not benefiting him at all, right? He can't benefit himself no matter what he does if he's not in the hand that he's dealing. So now you've taken that out of the equation as well. That's a great idea, I think. Well, what's one hand in the grand scheme of things, right? What's one hand?
Exactly.
That you're doing so cool. Very good idea.
And when it gets down to where it's shorthanded, then you just have somebody else sit in that's not playing it.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, it would actually clear up a lot of problems, I think. So, you know, those of you out there in self-dealt, definitely I would bring that up to your managers. All right, well, Desiam, thank you for sending us your call to the floor. We are going to send you a download of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products from Smapsoft. You don't have to be a winner. Enjoy this great app. You can download it yourself by visiting the iTunes store. And remember to email your call the floor questions to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. Just got a couple more in this week, so hopefully our good friend Jody will be back with his valuable insight on next week's show.
Now, the weeks are flying by. I mean, we're in our fifth year of publishing. Time just seems to be not on the normal, you know. I can't believe how fast things are going with us. I mean, it's almost 2013 already. So I have no idea how long ago it was that we had this conversation about the dead button. I really don't.
It's been a while.
It's been a while, but you know, we had that conversation about the blinds and should the person be able to skip a blind because of... No, there's no. We don't think that you should be able to do that, and it used to tick me off online. There was one or two sites that did that where they skipped the blind or something. So Poker Geek, our good friend and our Minnesota ambassador, sent in his own clip to explain how it's done where he is.
Hi, Chris and Scott. This is Poker Geek here calling in about the live button versus dead button discussion. The card rooms here in Minnesota use a live button for cash games, and I just wanted to clarify that if done properly, players never get to skip any of their blinds. If the big blind and the small blind rack up and don't play the next hand, then the next player is the button. However, you'll have three big blinds. One on the button, and two to the left of the button. The next hand, the button will move one to the left, and you'll have one big blind and three small blinds. So nobody actually gets to skip any of their blinds. In cash games, it can help to promote action, and a player never gets the advantage of being on the button two hands in a row. Anyway, I just wanted to clarify that having a live button shouldn't allow anyone to skip their blinds, and you'll just have more than the traditional two blinds in any given hand.
You know, and I've seen this in action, and I've never, not that I haven't understood it, but it only happens every once in a while, and now I understand better why. It's because I haven't really paid attention to which rooms are live and dead buttons.
Yeah.
But I have seen this done, and it certainly is more fair. It's obviously tremendously more confusing for players to understand when there's three blinds and then blah 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 until it eventually gets caught up again. But I gotta say that's probably the best way to go, isn't it?
Yes, it is, and I'm with you in that camp where I just do what they tell me to do at the table
because exactly,
I'm just like, what? All right, I trust you that it's gonna work out in the end.
You know, and every time it happens, too, somebody's like, "What's going on?" She's like, "Trust me, two or three more hands, and everything's gonna be all right." Okay.
It's always confusing when someone comes to the table for the first time and it's in the middle of one of these. And they're like, "I thought I was playing 1-3, not 1-3-2-5-6-8." You know, and they're like, "No, this is no." And then you gotta explain it to them anyway. But yeah, I'm with you. I just sit down and say, "Just tell me what to do, what to pay, and I'll pay it."
Now, I will say this. I wonder, how big of an issue do you think it is that somebody keeps the button two or three hands? I mean, Geek brought that up on this. This is a reason that folks use the live button, so no one has the advantage of that. I guess I can see that, but I also don't think it's that big of a deal.
I agree. It's one of those rarities that happens every once in a while, and it's not like we're choosing the person who gets the button and gets to, you know, get the benefit of it. It's just, it happened to fall that way this one time, and there has to be a fair way. I would rather have a fair way of people paying the money they are owed to me than not have the guy have position. You know, I mean, to me, I don't really, it doesn't bother me.
Okay.
All right, well, you know what? By the time you're listening to this, unless you're absolutely devoted and you're picking it up Wednesday afternoon or you don't care about Thanksgiving, Scott will be at Thunder Valley Casino Resort in Sacramento, California for the inaugural Annie Up Poker Tour event. Yay! Yay! Stop by the Annie Up table and say hi. And stick around to play the main event starting November 30th. Of course, there's more details of all AUPT events at AnnieUpPokerTour.com. Pretty exciting stuff, Scott. You must be nervous.
Very excited. You know, kind of weird flying on Thanksgiving on a business trip.
Yeah, yeah.
But I've got to do all the normal Thanksgiving stuff I do anyhow ahead of time. So it's actually going to be a nice day. And they got 171 players for their first event on Monday. I haven't heard what they got last night for Omaha, but definitely people are excited and stoked. So I'm looking forward to getting out there and seeing that place buzz. I mean, it's always buzzing when I'm out there. But definitely, sounds like a lot of people are real excited. I had an email this week, somebody that is going to be flying in for the main event.
Yeah, cool.
That's good to hear. You know, absolutely
cool.
Love to hear that. So, very excited to see it. So, if you're going to be around, I know a couple people already told me you would be. We'll have an Annie Up table set up. Swing by, say hi. I'll be playing a couple events too, but I'll be around and would love to meet you.
Absolutely. A cover's on the line, baby. The first cover. Very exciting stuff. Don't forget, we're looking for a new ambassador or multiple ambassadors for the Canada area. I like to call it the Canada area.
Okay.
To me, I like to localize it. You know, we're hyper local with our magazine so much so that we think of Canada as an area. So make sure you apply at AnnieUpMagazine.com/ambassadors. We have someone lined up probably for the Vancouver area already. So let's see if we can get the rest of the area on board.
Excellent. And don't forget to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for a little burst of love every day.
Yeah, yeah. We're near 23 followers on Twitter now. Very exciting stuff.
2,300.
Did I say 23? Oh,
jeez. You said 23. I thought for a minute that I pulled ahead.
Sorry, 2,300. Okay, let's see what happened this week on the Annie Up News Desk.
John Pappas, the executive director of the Poker Players Alliance, is pushing Senators Harry Reid and John Kyle to make changes to the proposed bill regulating online poker before the lame duck session of Congress gets into full swing. Also, Pappas said after meeting with federal officials that the repayment process for players owed money by Full Tilt Poker is unlikely to be a speedy one, though the Department of Justice later said that the claims administrator would be hired by January.
Yeah, and then last night I was looking through the wires and stuff, and the Las Vegas Review Journal had a piece about the actually Pappas and the PPA hiring this constitutional lawyer to look it over, and there's more problems. You know, it's unconstitutional, and this penalty box that they're putting the offshore people in is not constitutional, and it's going on and on. So they're meeting more and more speed bumps. It's like, come on, let's get this done. Let's get it through. Now, I realize Pappas is looking for it, and not Pappas, but the PPA, is looking for it to be the best bill possible and everything. But do you think that kind of hurts the deal now, that him doing this, or what?
Well, I'm not certainly not a constitutional scholar or lawyer, but I'd always thought that I never heard it called the penalty box, but that part of it was going to be problematic because it's designed to shut out the sites that the government feels that are bad, the Full Tilts and the Poker Stars that did the fraud and all that kind of stuff. But there's no way of keeping those folks out without also keeping out other sites that didn't necessarily do that kind of stuff. And that little nation of Antigua has filed all kinds of World Trade Organization complaints about the U.S., and that's exactly what they're talking about here. What I did realize, and I thought was interesting, is that they have a clause in there that says that if any part of the bill is deemed unconstitutional, that the remaining parts of the bill stay in effect, which is kind of like a pretty cool get-out-of-jail-free card.
Yeah. So does that mean that they could pass the law, but the parts that are unconstitutional aren't passed? Is that what they're...
Well, no, I mean, they would pass the law, then eventually it would theoretically get challenged in a court, and if it's ruled unconstitutional, then by having that clause in there, they just essentially take out that clause.
Ah, okay.
The rest of the bill stays in effect, and then it would allow, it would eliminate the penalty box, allow those companies to come in right away. Again, they would still have to get licensed and everything like right. that, so it's right. a weird kind of a weird debate to have, because, you know, technically, you know, no one has to license anyone, you know.
Yeah, that's so, right. That's right.
So there's another way around getting what they're trying to get at. And again, let's be honest, part of the reason this is in there is not so much the punitive nature of Stars, but to let U.S. companies get the leg up on this. So right. that's really what we're talking about here. But still, I'm still, it's going to be a very interesting 6 weeks here coming up, five, 6 weeks.
No, not to get too deep into this or anything, because I think I'm oversimplifying it, but I never understood how our United States Constitution can be unconstitutional to companies and countries off seas, you know, over, you know, whatever. I mean, they're not part of our country, so how, or whatever we want to write about people who aren't in our country, how is that unconstitutional?
Well, we're making it an unfair trade environment for those countries. At the same time, we're expecting fair trade from their company, their country on other things.
So, okay, that's what they're expecting, is they're expecting it. It's like a one-way street instead, is what you're saying.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. We were talking about global trade. I mean, now you're talking about countries working together.
Yeah.
And then if you say, all right, we want to work together on this, but on this, it's just going to be our companies. We're going to make it harder for your companies to come in here.
Right.
Then you're making it unfair at that point. And Antigua's been very successful on this on a lot of things, so.
Attorneys representing former Full Tilt Poker executive Howard Lederer have filed a motion to dismiss the $42.5 million civil complaint against him, in addition to claiming that the complaint requires a cartographer to understand. The attorneys say a federal judge's ruling that poker is a game of skill and the lack of a fraud charge levied against Lederer are reasons that the suit has no merit.
I think this is an interesting response. I mean, obviously, I mean, they're going to continue to file things and get it dismissed until something happens here.
Right.
Sometimes it's grasping at straws, but I think there are some real straws in here that they're using. You know, definitely. I mean, we've said this before, and I'm not trying to get people upset at us again about our false love for Lederer, because there is no love there. But this is what I've been saying before. If the government thought that they had a fraud case against them, they would charge him with fraud.
Yeah, that's right.
But they haven't. And so what they're saying in this complaint is, if there's no fraud, then where's the money laundering?
That's right.
You know, he was operating a business. He was taking money out. No fraud. So, I mean, that. And then, of course, then, I mean, the other thing, too, is, you know, they're using this federal judge's ruling, which we are all excited about. Different levels of excitement in the poker community, right?
Right.
But I know there are people out there that just absolutely hate Full Tilt and want to see Lederer burn at the stake. And here's the problem is here is you can't hope that the U.S. Attorney's Office or the judge here invalidates the federal judge ruling in this case, because it invalidates it on the cases that we want it to be.
Yep.
So you can't have it both ways.
Yep.
And I think that's going to be interesting to see how that works out. All right, and finally, the World Series of Poker has announced the 2013 series will run from May 29th to July 16th. With the final table, the main event returning to Las Vegas in the fall. The exact schedule of events hasn't yet been released, but organizers say it will closely match the 2012 schedule.
Interesting. I mean, I didn't necessarily think that they were going to eliminate the delayed final table, because they may still love it, you know what I mean? But just to me, it just felt like it's losing its luster. But yeah, and I'm not too shocked that the schedule is actually staying roughly the same, because, you know, when we were out there, you know, they have all those other tournaments going on as well in their right, building, yeah. And they had it down to pretty much a science. So, you know what? Why screw with it? You know what I mean? I mean, yeah, there were some tweaks here and there with, you know, certain events or buy-ins or whatever. But really, I mean, why screw with it?
Yeah, and they had good turnout last year for it as well too. So we'll see. And I don't think they necessarily eliminated the possibility that the final table could be resolved with this release. I think they left themselves an out. I mean, they never said coming back November. They just said it'll play down to the final table on this day. So there's still a possibility.
Right.
I mean, usually they don't come out with the schedule until at least January, sometimes late as February. So the next couple months, you know, some stuff might change. But at least you know the dates.
All right. We get to kick off a brand new, fresh O'Malley's move. Here we go.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we find ourselves back in our regular $1, $2, No Limit Hold'em home game. This time, we're playing ten-handed. We've slipped up a bit, and find ourselves with 175. We're on the button. The action gets folded around to the cutoff, who makes it $8 to go, and has about $300 behind. We look down at the ace of spades, jack of diamonds. This player is pretty tricky, and he likes to steal. In fact, he's the same player we had that heads-up bet against several months ago. We make the call, yes, with a trap hand, but we are in position. The blinds fold, pot is about $20, and the flop comes the ace of hearts, 10 of clubs, 9 of clubs. Okay, there are alarm bells going off. This could be trouble. Our opponent leads out for $12. Top pair, third best kicker. I know, this is starting to sound like one of those push and pray stories. We make the call, but we don't like it. The pot is at about $45, and the turn is the jack of clubs. Did we just suck out? Our opponent checks this time, and we count out a bet of $25. He instantly raises us all in. What do we do?
All right, I'm here with one of Antiup's favorite people, Mr. Lee Childs. We're aboard the Antiup Poker Cruise. Always a wonderful time. Perhaps a better time this time because you brought everyone remotely related to the Childs on this cruise. Did you not?
I did. It's been awesome, man. I'm just glad to be back. Appreciate you inviting me back and having my wife and son and her family and some of my family here. It's just been a great time.
And your dad. It's his first time on the cruise this year.
Third time this year. It's only his third.
He's been
time
on
this
every
year.
Cruise that you've been on, hasn't he?
Yes, he has.
And probably the last one because he won every single tournament this time.
Yeah, he's starting to finally listen. So you know, now that I've starting to feel like pretty good about raising him right, and he's finally starting to listen and making me proud. So.
And you know what's funny about that though is the very first day he pulled me aside and said he's still not listening to me, and then he goes on to win the first two tournaments.
He had an outright win and a chop, and had a couple other students do pretty well. I had Jim, who had a chop for one, or got second to my dad. My dad won the next cruise,
yep.
And Jim finished second in that one, and then he took today's down, just destroyed it.
Got, of course,
like,
he was.
I don't know, he got like 150 bounties out of the
I'm not
like,
going to say anything, but when I flop a set against him, he goes runner spades when I'm the second in chips.
Yeah. Here's the thing: if you knock out me, and you knock out my dad, and you knock out Scott Long, you have the most dangerous chips in the tournament. You're gonna win. Those 15,000 chips right there from knocking us out, that'll do it. Can't be stopped.
Well, you know, I will say this: I'm not trying to bugger you up. Because you're always on the show, but a couple of your students are very strong here. I know they came on. You've already tutored them before they came on, but they went to both of your classes. But Jim was one of them. Tom was another one. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very interesting as a player to watch players that I know have been under your wing versus ones that I know haven't been under your wing.
Right.
And I'm sure you probably watched it at the table too, right?
Yeah, definitely. And it's an interesting dynamic when I'm playing with them because. You know, I want to do things a little differently than what I teach. They want to do things that they think, that I think they wouldn't do. You know, so we have some interesting mind games and leveling going on. But, you know, both of those guys have been to several classes. We've done some one-on-one stuff. And, you know, and I was joking around with them, too, that, you know, I felt great about, you know, I've always felt great about any repeat business, right? Like, especially if you've done one-on-one coaching more than once. Or been to multiple classes, especially classes where the bulk of the material is the same, but they're still coming back to get it. I thought that was great, and then I realized, you know, maybe they just aren't that bright, and they're not comprehending it. Or maybe I'm not really teaching them that well. So I'm trying to figure it out now. But I'm settling on the fact that things are going well. I'm getting a lot of feedback from them. So, you know, all kidding aside, like, you know, these are guys that have been to so many classes that now I'm kind of using them kind of, you know, as an advisory council for me to give me feedback. And, you know, they hear if like when I did our group class, you know, they heard some talk from people that don't necessarily say something to me or you. They'd like more of this, less of this. And so it's great for me to be able to get that feedback from folks and just try to make things better. And, you know, where I can work with those guys who have been to a lot of the classes and, you know, and just, you know, give them more of what they're actually looking for to keep improving. You know, and sometimes it is some of the same stuff over and over because you need to hear it. You need it reinforced.
Repetition is never a bad thing.
Yeah. So, but I don't want to just, you know, just only be the same thing. I want to, like, give them little nuggets of what I've been adding to my game. And, you know, and Tom's been really good about, like, just, okay, you said you've been changing this or that. How have you been doing that? And so I was able to share that with the group in our little sessions, and you know, I think they were great.
Excellent. Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about training a little later, but first of all, I'm a little worried because I'm quite certain your agent's going to call and renegotiate your Antioch Poker Cruise contract here pretty soon, because on the first night of this cruise, you know, Chris wasn't here to bring the funny like he does at the open bar cocktail party.
It's true.
So I bored everyone to tears like I always do. And then Braden Child stole the show.
He did.
Took the mic. It was still hot. Dropped some West Coast rap there. And then a little air guitar. Had every woman in the room on their knees.
Yeah, a little air guitar, a little twinkle, twinkle, little star. Like, he brought it. And it was loud. And he's a star, man. I'm just telling you. Like, watch out.
I totally love, I mean, I love hanging out with him all the time. But watching him in the dining room of the cruise ship, and folks that haven't been on our cruise yet, you know, the waiters do all this really tacky dance, song and dance thing that most of us roll our eyes at. But no eye rolling going on from him. He was totally into that.
Yep. He loves to dance. He loves to drum, air guitar, piano. Yeah, I'm looking forward to him supporting me. You know, when he becomes the, you know, the next Bieber or whatever. Like, I think like people will be like, oh yeah, like Justin Bieber was the old Braden Childs. Like, he won't even be the next Justin Bieber. They're gonna be like, oh yeah, he was that guy that was kind of like Braden.
All right, so let's talk a little training here. In a couple weeks, on December 2nd, you'll be playing in the Daytona Toyota Hollywood Holiday Charity Classic. I knew I was going to mess that up. With also somebody of a smaller stature, Chris Cosenza.
Slightly.
So first of all, let's talk a little bit about charity, because I know most pros will play in charity tournaments. When you ask them that, they talk about, oh, I love the giving back and stuff. But I think it's a little bit more sincere coming from you. You know, I know you've gone to a lot of other charity tournaments where they haven't even covered your expenses. And I just know where you're coming from, that this seems to be more important to you than it does to maybe some other people that I asked this question. Is that a fair statement?
No, that's pretty nice of you. I didn't really even like you until you said it. No, I appreciate that. Yeah, I've done a lot of things, and I, you know, I actually kind of feel similarly about some of the training that I've done and some of the side conversations I have with people, you know, especially on the cruises. We have a lot of conversations, like, outside of the classes. Like, you know, I try to be pretty approachable because I want to help people. And so it's, you know, it may not necessarily be charity, but, you know, I'm just, you know, when I'm in this kind of environment, I want to help people improve. And I love, you know, even other professionals that I talk to, like, if I'm able to, you know, give them something that they're to implement and it helps their game, like, I love hearing about that, you know. And that's the best thing for me from the teaching perspective is hearing a success story, or hearing, like, you know, I wouldn't have done this if I hadn't heard it, you know, the light bulb came on when you said this. Those are the things, you know, that I love about about teaching. And, you know, from the charity perspective, it is an opportunity to give back. You know, and playing poker, you kind of make your living taking money from people, and it can be discouraging. We had conversations about that at the table tonight. You know, if you play somewhere, like certain places where if you're playing, you know that some people are playing with like their rent checks.
Right.
You know, you actually can't even enjoy winning a pot, you know, and you want to be able to play the game and enjoy winning, obviously, because it's the competition of it. And so, you know, I think that's why, you know, the poker business in general, there's a lot of poker players that are pretty charitable, and I think, you know, it's not necessarily that they're that outspoken about it, but and I think that, you know, for those of us that at least have kind of a normal, decent mindset,
yeah,
that's part of the reason why we want to give back, is we do have to take money from people for a living, and, you know, and that's, it's another, it ties in with the teaching. I want people to play within their bankroll means,
right,
so that it's not their rent check, it's not their kids' educational money or whatever, you know. And so it's, yeah, I love being part of this charity thing. We're going to do the training there. They're doing a tournament on Saturday night, and, you know, and the charity tournament on Sunday. It's just, it's going to be a blast.
Now, how much of it do you think is because you have, I think what most people would say, be a real good family life? I mean, a lot of pros are single still. They don't have kids. They don't have a home, really, to be honest. You know, you've got a great wife, a new son, and a normal life. Does that keep you a little bit more grounded than maybe some of these people that live and die by how much they make on poker?
Yeah, you know, maybe. I don't know that it's necessarily just what my family is, because there's probably a lot of people with their families that still focus just on the money. And part of it is just becoming, it's not even necessarily because of age. I mean, you know, I'm 40 now, but the just understanding what's actually important, you know, and like, yeah, like, I really love to compete at poker. I want to win. Yes, I want to make money. I want to be able to buy my iPads and whatever else that I've got. I like my toys. But I also, you know, I've learned a lot, especially in the last couple of years, about, you know, some of the real problems in the world, and you know, the people that don't even have clean water to drink, you know. And so that stuff is, you know, it really affects me, and that's something that my wife and I want to do something about. And we have a lot of, you know, probably not that far off in the distance, you know, goals in regard to those things, and, you know, and certain issues that, you know, may or may not be public things that even get talked about. Like, that's just for us, and it's you know, for different groups, and that we want to do something for. And it's honestly, you know, it's not because we have just money everywhere to do it, but, you know, most of the people in the United States, and anybody that's able to take a cruise like this, anybody that's able to play poker on a regular basis, yeah, they do have a lot of money where they can make a difference for people who really have nothing, you know. And the more you learn about those things, the more you realize how, like, a small, just even a small contribution can make a big difference. So, you know, I think, you know, the way I was raised, I mean, my mom and dad were just awesome. You know, we're a normal family, and when I say normal, it's, we're weird. Like, we're, you know, there's messed up things. It's,
yeah,
everybody's got their issues. There's all kinds of family drama from time to time, and you know, if you don't have those things, I think you're abnormal, you know. So it's not just like it's all smooth sailing all the time. And but I am blessed. I mean, my wife is just awesome. She understands poker. She understands my traveling. She's been so supportive. And then, you know, and Braden, you know, he's like, he gets it. If one of us is out of town, he's cool with it. If we both go somewhere and leave him with family members, he's cool with it. You know, and like, I, you know, for a long time, it was really bothering me being away from him, because when he's that small, you miss so much, even in a week or two.
Sure.
But he deals with it. Like, he's fine, you know, and I see it, you know, like, and, you know, and then I go through periods where, like, I'm out of town for a long time, so he's just with Jenny each time I'm going out of town, so he's, like, never apart from her. And then yet, when she goes out of town for a few days, he's fine, you know, it's just me and him, and he's fine. Like, he asks about her. He wakes up asking for her. But he's fine. And so you realize, like, yeah, you can do this. And so that allows us to keep, you know, pursuing the things we want to do, you know, trying to help other people as well, and, you know, and still have lots of family time.
But it took me a long time to feel comfortable leaving Cosenza at home, too.
I would, too, man. I mean, you know, because Gene might not, like, warm up his milk at
exactly.
night.
And absolutely.
He might not have, you know, she might have, like, oatmeal raisin instead of chocolate cookies at bedtime, so...
It'd be a disaster.
I know.
So,
he'd, like,
I mean,
flip out.
It's
about the
tough.
Injustice.
All right, so folks can get more information on this great tournament event at holidaycharityclassic.com. I believe it's $150 buy-in before the event, $175 the day of. Tremendous overlays for a charity tournament, I think. Winner gets a great Borgata package, a couple of
cruise
packages, all kinds of stuff in there.
And there's several charities that benefit from this.
Absolutely.
You know, I've been working with these guys and just finding out what they're doing. It's just, I'm really excited about coming down there. And Chris Cosenza's in the field, folks. Dead money.
Easy
Sign
money.
Sign up.
Now, tell folks a little bit about the training you're going to be doing. Is it the day before, right?
It's the day before. It's on Saturday in the afternoon. We have I think it's about an hour and a half long beginner session that is free. I know they're doing some giveaways there at the poker room, so I'm not sure exactly if anybody can come or whatever. But you can contact the casino and the poker room. They'll be able to tell you. And then we have a more like kind of intermediate to advanced class that'll be about three and a half hours, and I'll be covering a lot of like specific topics, and we'll certainly address the, you know, specific structure of the tournament coming up, not only Saturday night but also on Sunday. So that's what's funny. They're doing like the Lee Child Saturday night special or something, and I don't know if they're putting a bounty on me or what they're doing, but you know, it's pretty cool. It's the first time I've had my own little tournament, and you know, so we're gonna have that tournament. The other one. And so what I like to do is when I do these, and you know, when I do like my trainings from Inside the Mines before like the Borgata series, we usually tailor it, you know, or we do tailor it towards some specific tournaments, so we can really look at structures and help people get prepared. So we'll be doing that for both the Saturday night and the charity tournament itself. And you know, I just think it's going to be, you know, a really good, you know, it'll be packed with information. It's a relatively short class, but I'd love those too, because I know that I want to just drill a lot of like really core concepts. And you know, you've seen it from the classes you've done on the ship.
Yeah.
You know, your beginners classes, like you mentioned, like somebody almost always wins a tournament. You did your Omaha class today, and everybody in there, you know, did great in the tournament. You know, and it's really cool to see that happen. And it's refreshing to me to know, you know, from the training perspective, it just reinforces that, you know, what you believe in as far as teaching people and reinforcing things, that when they get that, they're going to implement it. And I've been seeing it over and over this week. I mean, it's amazing. We came out of the one cash game course, and then we happened to get the, you know, they opened up a new table, so there were like four or five people that were in my class. And it was one of the most technically solid games I've been in a long time. We're playing 1-3, you know, and it was like real, it was like almost playing 5-10 or 10 and a quarter poker, you know. It was like real solid. It was cool, because it's all fresh in everybody's mind, you know, and they're really thinking about the game. They're not just wanting to see flops and hit hands and play the game. They're really trying to make money. It's really cool.
And I should say, again, this is December 1st and 2nd, this event.
Second and 3rd, right?
Second and 3rd?
Yep. I think second
first third. Weekend of December.
First weekend in December.
Go to Holiday.
Whatever.
HolidayCharityClassic.com.
Yep.
And you will find it, actually.
Yep.
Now, you mentioned Inside the Mines, which you do often at the Borgata.
Yep.
And, of course, you've done Acumen Poker before that. So where is training headed for you? Is it anything you can let us know, or is the Inside the Mines getting bigger?
I think, I don't know what the name will be. You know, it changes from time to time, but I really hope we've been growing at Borgata. I'm extremely grateful to the folks there who, you know, Ray and the other folks have, you know, just given me a tremendous opportunity to get it started. They came to me looking to get a training program started there, and we've been able to do it, and we've had tremendous results from our students. And and we're, you know, the main goal, we're trying to do one or two training sessions every time they do a series, which is five times a year. So, you know, and there's times where we may do it when there's not a full series, and there may be a time like during the summer where we may or may not be able to do it. And I've been doing some stuff locally in the DC area, and, you know, have some other ideas based on some recent legislation passes, thanks to Maryland. And, you know, without saying too much about what we have in the works, I think there's some pretty big things. And so for our, you know, the listeners and fans and people that really want to improve their game, I've got a lot of ideas and some pretty cool people that I've been talking to about really developing some cool stuff. And where they have the opportunity to not only learn from some great people, but to have a lot of fun, you know. And that's where I really want to, I focus a lot, like, on from the business perspective. I want people, I want to, you know, kind of inspire people to get better. I want people to have fun, you know. And if you're not trying to get better and learn the game, and if you're not having fun playing the game, then just stop playing the game. Go do something else, you know.
Absolutely.
But, you know, and it's, and of course the main thing is fun. If you don't get better and you don't care if you suck, then have fun. And great, like, and we talk about that in a lot of our classes here. Like, if that's your goal, if it's recreation, that's okay. You don't have to know pot odds. You don't have to make the correct play here and there, whatever. Like, have fun, play the game. We've had some of the most fun games here, and a lot of joking back and forth, you know, a lot of ribbing each other, and, you know, and that's fun. And, you know, win or lose, I mean, you saw me right before we came over here, and
yep.
Bottom two pair against top set. Oh, that's a bad situation. That's what I played the hand for. I wanted two pair better. I got stacked off, but I don't care. Like, nice guy got the money. Everybody's having fun. Doesn't bother me, you know. It's good. But yeah, the training's been great. The opportunity that they gave me there, you know, Borgata's just like the place to play on the East Coast, and I have some other places that have been great to me too, but, you know, I've just, it's a beautiful casino. They have the best tournaments, best structures, and our training classes being right there, tailored to their tournaments, you know, I love the opportunity there and the promise for the program.
All right, well, speaking of getting better, I mean, I think that's what everybody as a poker player wants to do, whether you're having fun or not. You want to get better every time you go out. One of the things I've been working on is I've got this reputation on the podcast of being the short stack ninja, milking my chips when I'm short stack, and I still contend that I think people make a lot of mistakes when they're short stacked. Their chips are much more valuable than earlier in the tournament.
Yep.
However, what I'm taking to heart from a lot of our listeners is what's got me to the point where I'm short stacked. You can play that short stack as well as you can, but you must have done something before then to get to that point. Now, every once in a while, there's a bad beat or something, obviously. But so I've been paying attention to that a lot in my game. And the night before the cruise, Dover Downs, one of our great sponsors of this cruise, had a little event, and we were out there. And I found myself in this situation, and I'm very curious for some advice from some of you, from someone like you on this. I was being very aggressive early in the tournament, chipping up, you know, making moves, even with not worrying about the cards, but picking the right situations, right, and chipping up. And then a situation happened where a player who happened to be two to my left, the best player at the table, a very, very sharp guy, he was very short stack. He was down 2,000 units early.
Wait, you're not the best player at the table?
Second best.
You're a poker
very
player.
Close,
you're supposed
second
to have the
best.
Ego. You're supposed to have the ego that you're the best.
See, there's enough ego with Chris Cosenza. I don't need to.
Oh, yeah, that's
to.
True.
Yeah, so he takes 95% of the ego.
I love the recognition.
I'm doing the best I can with the 5% I have.
Who's better? Who's kind of the same? Who's worse? All right, good job. This guy's better than you.
Exactly.
He's
and he's
to, your
to
left.
My left. He was short stacked, right. And I wasn't really paying attention to him because he's short stacked. That's how he's going to be out. He went on a great run, and now he's the chip leader at the table, right?
Okay.
So the problem I had was, at that point, I didn't feel like it could be as aggressive playing as many pots as I was, knowing that I had to go through this player now. And I ultimately decided to tighten up. And then, of course, what happens when you do that situation is you have to wait for the good cards, and the good cards never come when you do that. And I ended up at the end short stack where I had to make a shove with 10x blinds and got knocked out of the tournament. So my question to you is, in that situation, do you just plow through and say, you know what, I'm not worried about this person being better than me, I got to play my game, or do you do something different?
Well, you know, I think you've got to continue to play your game, and if this person starts exploiting their position against you a lot, you know, if this player who you honestly believe is a better player, if they start three-betting you a lot and isolating you, then, you know, in general, if a better player is consistently isolating you, then you have to concede position to them. You can't just try to call and outplay them out of position. It can't happen. So you have to identify people on your right that you can outplay, and you can do the same thing too. So it can definitely make it tough. So
what you're saying is if somebody before me raised, then I can re-raise there and kind of essentially shut that player out.
Right. Like they're going to
make it much tougher for them.
Yeah, they're going to have a real hand to four-bet you or to even flat you. You know, like it's, you need to find somebody to your right. And that's a lot of people, you know, this is, I talk about this a lot in a lot of places, you know, from the image thing, from how to build stacks, you know, basically if you have somebody who is doing something to you that annoys you, then do it to somebody else, right? Like, and if you have a superior player on your left, then you don't have to try to adjust to that particular player. You have to find somebody weaker to you on your right, you know, and or you have to gamble mm-hmm. with the player that's better than you. You know, if I was, you know, and I've had this happen in multiple tournaments where, you know, I've been against players that, you know, several of them at the table I thought were far superior, you know, especially earlier in my career. And as I started to play more of the big tournaments, and I'd look around the table and I'd see five people who I knew was far and above or better than me, yeah, I'm willing to take a flip with them, you know. And, you know, if I'm sitting there with Phil Ivey, yeah, I'm willing to get it in with, like, ace-jack suited, ace-10 suited. Like, I'm not going to try to outplay him over and over again.
Sure.
Yes, he's better. Like, he's going to have an advantage. So, you know, in this particular spot, though, like, this guy got short. So, you know, my question is, like, how, like, did he get short, like, trying to run over the table and failing? Did he, you know, and was he playing back at you a lot? Was he three-betting you if you raised?
Well, that's the tough thing, is I didn't realize he was a good player until he started chipping up. I mean, I'd never been to this casino before. I never played with any of these people before. And I just assumed everybody, you know, you take that baseline you just have, you assume everybody is decent until you have otherwise. And because I was, you know, making good moves and getting people to lay down, I never really thought of him as a good player. And then when he got chips is when I started paying attention to him and watching his play and realized that...
Why did you decide that he was a good player? What made you think that?
He was making the kind of moves that I was making before that, I guess is what it was. And he was, when he was showing down, good hands. But a lot of the time when he was betting, you know when you're out of the hand and you seem to see the hand a whole lot better than when you're in the hand? I think that's what was going on. I was like, he doesn't have anything there. He's just betting because he knows that guy doesn't have anything, and that guy folds. And I'm like, how could you not know that he knows that you don't have anything? It was that kind of stuff, I think.
Yeah, so he's winning a lot of hands without showdown, but if it went to showdown, he had it.
Absolutely.
So it was just really solid, and he may or may not have had it when, you know.
Oh, exactly, absolutely.
Yeah, that's the thing you got to figure out. But in general, usually he probably didn't have it, and it was
then I should say a couple people that played there came up to me on breaks and said, you know, hey, that guy's pretty good. That kind of helps.
Okay,
but, you know, I don't know those people either, so, you know, you take what you can.
But I think, like, you may have fallen into worrying about him a little bit too much. If he wasn't specifically playing back at you,
mm-hmm.
then you should continue with your game. And if you raise, and every time you raise, he three bets you, well, now you got to figure out, like, is he actually, like, it sounds like you actually have similar games.
and sounds like you're like two of the best players there, which makes me want to go play there if you and him are.
I highly recommend it.
It sounds like you know, like you're both obviously pretty solid, and but if he's not playing back at you, then he's not a concern at all.
Right.
You know, so it doesn't matter. Like, if every time I raise, if Phil Ivey lets me raise, then it doesn't matter that he's on my left. If he three bets me every single time, then I have to tighten up a little bit, or I have to start punishing somebody else. I have to be, you know, raising more on the button when he's going to be out of position.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have to adjust to that. And you also, to a certain extent, have to now revert back to actually just playing your cards. You're not going to play, you know, your situation becomes against this specific opponent. It becomes a more card-dependent game.
Yeah.
And, you know, which, you know, when all else fails, just kind of go back to that and play a little ABC. And, you know, there's going to be weaker players. So, you know, find the spots to try to play against the weaker players and isolate them. Stay away from those that are better, especially at that position on you, and you can still do pretty well. I think you may have gotten a little too intimidated because of everybody saying stuff, and I know you're not like intimidated, like scared, oh my gosh, you know, but from the tournament perspective, you're like a little reluctant to just open with some of your rags. But people aren't going to play back at you as much as you think they are, and so if you just keep going at them, especially you had the chips to do it at least at some point, so don't worry about him getting chips, just keep doing your thing and let him know you've been coached by the best. I mean, I would say.
Now there's another part of this that I think is kind of interesting, and want your take on. We talked about at the beginning of the screws too with some players here that we all seem to be better players when we first started the game, and then those of us that decided that we actually wanted to learn what we were doing, it seemed like we got worse when we knew what we were supposed to be doing, and we were doing that before when we just didn't care. And this might be stretching it a little bit, but in this particular situation, once I realized that this player had got the chips and I was starting to fear for him, I realized at that point that the table that we were at was going to be the next one to break. And I don't think that's something that most people in the normal daily or weekly tournament ever think about. Hey, what's the order of the breaking of the tables?
Yep.
So in my mind, I said, you know what? I don't really need to outplay this guy. I just need to outlast him until the table breaks, and then we're going to get moved. We might end up at the same table, but it can't be worse position than I have right now. So let's just play it out. And unfortunately, it took a good hour before this table broke, and it kind of ruined it. But is that something that's overthinking it? Really, in any tournament, but particularly maybe in this $150 weekly tournament.
No, I mean, you should definitely be cognizant of it. And it's good. It's good to always be thinking that way, because then you're thinking that way in the bigger tournaments. You know, it's important to, you know, and you play larger tournaments than that sometimes. And so, you know, you need to be thinking that. That's what happens a lot of times when people play bigger tournaments and they play smaller ones, they kind of forget some of that stuff. You know, so you need to be thinking along those lines, because the rest of them, for the majority, most of them aren't. You know, so if you're thinking of that, it's just another way that you have an edge. Now, that can also happen, you know, like in a satellite. Say you've got enough chips to kind of make it, but then the bubble takes a lot longer than you expected it to, and now you're in trouble and you got to play a hand. So you've actually folded your jacks and you folded your queens. You may have even folded your aces because you had your chips locked down, you know, and which is correct a lot in satellites. But then it took longer than you anticipated. So did you make a mistake calculating it, or did it actually just take longer than it should have? And, you know, and you try to figure that out and learn from that. But, you know, I think, you know, knowing that you're next to break. I mean, if you're next to break and all the tables are full, you know, that may be, you know, I don't know if you, like, gauged how many people were left overall.
Yeah.
Just knowing you're next to break is one thing, but knowing you're next to break, it, you know, say you've got five tables and there's 37 or 38 people left and you're next to break is one thing. But, you know, if there's 45 people left, it's still going to be a while. So you got to make sure you're thinking about that too. And that may have been a part that you missed that it took a little
bit
longer.
I'm sure that is a part that I missed, absolutely.
Right.
All right, well, I know after you get off the ship here, you're driving straight for the Regatta, right? And then obviously we know you're going to be down in Florida in early December. What else is on the calendar coming up?
Yeah, I'm going to play the main event at Borgata for their fall open, then down to Daytona Beach for the charity tournament and the classes. I will play the circuit in AC early, right after the charity tournament in Daytona Beach. Possibility of doing another class at Borgata. I'm not sure if we're going to get that together or not. I've been talking with them there, and it's getting kind of close now, and I got caught up in going on the cruise, so I didn't get all the marketing out, so I don't know if we're going to do it, but, you know, stay tuned for maybe some tweets about that it may come together. It'll be a good one, for sure. And then, there's a possibility that right after Borgata and right after Thanksgiving, I head up for the Montreal WPT, but that's a little iffy right now just because it's so tight. But then after December, we get into January, we're going to be definitely doing a big Inside the Minds session, maybe two courses in January. I've been working with some pretty phenomenal people that I think will be they should be a huge draw. If they're not a huge draw, then people need to realize who they are and realize what they have to offer, because these classes are going to be phenomenal. It's, you know, people, I can't wait to like hear them talk about the game myself, and you know, we'll see what happens there. But still slight possibility going down to PCA early, early January. But
can't get enough of the Bahamas, can you?
No, I can't. and I didn't get off this time, so I need to come back and actually get off maybe I'll take another ship. I don't know. But, it's such a great tournament, the PCA there.
Yeah,
it's got to be the, you know, second best 10K there is next to the main event. So I'd like to do it. I know Jenny and Braden would love to come too. I don't know if they will because we've just taken this big vacation. But anyway, that's a possibility. But the main thing is, you know, the charity tournament, Daytona Beach, circuit, and actually a weekend back at Borgata. They run this 1K, 250K guarantee with, it's by far the best structure 1K I've seen, and they're doing that mid-December, so I'm definitely going to play that. And then it's the holidays with the family, and then the main thing is definitely, you know, Borgata in January, some of the circuit stuff coming up early, you know, after that, and just, you know, just continue lots of teaching and lots of playing. That's pretty much it.
Excellent. Well, again, it's going to be the first weekend in December. Go to holidaycharityclassic.com for all the information and to pre-register. And let our folks know where else they can go, your Twitter handle and all the other Inside the Minds information that they can find.
Twitter is Lee Childs, all one word. And Inside the Minds, you can go to inside-the-minds.com. And also on Facebook, facebook.com/InsideTheMinds. It's Inside the Minds on Twitter. And, you know, those are all the places you can keep up with what we have going on.
Well, I'm glad you made it on the cruise, Lee. Thanks for making it great. I know all of our players really enjoyed it, and obviously it's always great to have you on the show. So good luck in the Borgata and everywhere else. And until the next time when Chris complains about you not filing your column on time, thanks for joining us.
All right. Thanks, buddy.
Hi, this is Cindy Violet, and you're listening to Annie Up.
All right, we got a hand of the week going back to your wheelhouse here. 1-2 No Limit Hold'em.
All right.
I know we tortured you for the last couple weeks with Omaha and Limit Hold'em, and so I wanted to throw you a softball this week, Chris.
Thanks, buddy. It's been a rough week.
It's only going to get rougher. You got a lot of turkey to eat tomorrow. All right, this comes from our new good friend, Nick. And he says that he found our podcast this spring and has made his days in the tractor for this farmer in Helena, Montana? Is that Helena or Helena? Yeah.
Helena.
In Helena, Montana, go by a little quicker listening last few years' worth of shows.
Thanks.
Wow, that's great. You know, I know we've been listening to on Subway. airplanes and cars. Now I know we're being listened to on tractors.
Pretty cool. That's right. Well, he's doing the back 40. He's listening to us.
Montana, he probably has a back 80, actually.
He probably does.
It's a big state. It's a big state. All right, so he says, I'm playing 1-3. I'm sorry, 1-3, no less.
Oh, it's 1-3. Oh, wait, now I got to totally adjust and go to my happy place. Yeah, I'm ready.
All right, 1-3, no limit. And he says, boring, I know. Well, good, we're all in agreement here. But he's playing 1-3, no limit at the Aria in Las Vegas.
Hey.
Great room. And after a $200 buy-in, I have won a few nice pots and have $325. He says, in this hand, the first few players fold, and a young, super aggressive player raises a middle position to $10, which he says is the fairly standard raise at this table. That player has $350 in front of him when I sat down 3 hours ago, but using his style, he's run it up to squiggly $850 now, Chris. He's been playing big stack poker very effectively, making people make decisions for their stacks by overbetting the pot. And it folds to our farmer from Helena.
How do you not know the name of that town?
It could be Helena.
It's not.
I know it's not, but it could be. Our farmer from Helena.
And you're from Ohio.
See, it could be that. Absolutely. O-H-I-A. No, it's O-H-I-O. At least I'm spelling Helena phonetically.
Helena.
Yes.
All right.
Folds back to him on the button, and he looks down at two black tens. What's his move, Chris?
You know, there are a lot of games where I would just call with these two tens, but I'm not sure this is one of them. And the reason being is this guy is super aggro, according to what he said here, and he's super young, and he's young. All right, he's young, but he's super aggro.
He's not a 7-year-old.
You got a 7-year-old there pumping the pot. But really, to me, the other thing, too, is I don't really know what's left behind me. I don't know what the players like behind me. But if I just call his $10 raise for, you know, what would be the $7 more than the min, I think that a blind might come in or two, and maybe even another person. Where are we again? Are we on the button? Yeah.
We're on the button.
Yeah, so we might have the blind still come in for that, because once you call, now there's 24 in the pot, you know, 7 to win 24, you know, these guys. So you're inviting people to come in, and I'm not sure I want that with two tens. I mean, I know we talk about set mining and all that, but this guy's super aggro. You're way ahead of his range right now, and the last thing I want to do is have a blind get in for a cheap price and have a raggedy old jack 9 in his hand. A jack comes on the flop, and now we're out flopped and we've wasted $10. So I think I want to get heads up with this guy. I really think we're way ahead of his range, and I would like to 3-bet him, or is it, he raised, so I 3-bet him. And, you know, make it like 50 to go or something and see what he does. And if he comes over the top, you know, I still think that we're ahead of this guy. I think he's super aggro. Not that I'm saying I'm going to put all $325 in preflop with tens.
Right.
But I have a feeling we're way ahead of this guy. Normally, if we're in a hand...
You feel more comfortable doing that against this guy. Then.
Exactly. Right. If this guy was tight and I knew he was tight when playing with him for an hour and he raised, I would call with the two tens and set mine. And then not even worry about the people behind me, because I'm only looking for a set here or all unders, and then maybe even then gauge what kind of tight player he is by his post-flop action. And I have position on him the rest of the way, so I'm happy to do that. In this case, though, I feel like I'd rather be in position against an aggro player raising on my terms and see what he does and get heads up with him. So I think I'm raising here, to be honest. I know that Darren O'Gronu said it's just 10s, but I think in that situation it was... You know, we might have been out of position. It was a little tournament in the home game or something, and we didn't have a real good read in everybody. But in this case, if we know this guy is super aggro and he's young and he's real aggressive with, and he's got a big stack in front of him, you know, I'm thinking of raising here.
Okay. So let me ask you this. I don't necessarily disagree, but if you make it pop at the 50 here, I'm not so much worried about him four-betting us here. What I'm worried about is now we've committed $50 and the flop. It's probably not going to be kind to us, generally speaking. So how much are you going to want at that point? I would think this kind of guy, knowing these kind of players, going to let us make a C bet and then punish us there. So how much are you willing to put into this hand, let's say, if a jack, queen, king, or ace comes on the flop?
Well, I mean, that's hard to answer. You're right. If it well, the other thing, though, is that if he checks to me, I'm representing those cards. I'm not necessarily representing a pair of tens here.
True.
I'm telling this aggro guy I have a big hand. And that's generally how these guys prey on you. They put you – it's sort of that leverage, like Lederer wrote in that chapter, okay. That leverage thing where he's raising, and when you re-raise, he knows that you know that he's aggressive and could have anything. So right. By calling or by you putting out that re-raise, you're telling him and the whole world that you have really big cards. So if really big cards come and he checks to you, I have no problem representing those cards.
Okay, excellent point. So let me turn it the other way. What if it's not high cards?
Yeah, but normally I still have the over pair.
Like with tens. Exactly. But it's probably more in his wheelhouse for a two-pair kind of situation. Even if it's not on the flop, maybe he gets. Maybe he's more likely to get there later on.
And that's
I guess my
true,
ultimate point is, what point are you going to be feeling comfortable in this hand without a set?
Well, I'm comfortable up until he calls whatever I bet after the flop. If he calls and then checks again on the turn, then I may check behind and look for pot control and see what he does on the river. If he does one of those shoves on the river, then I'll have to reassess. But, I mean, I'm in position the rest of the way with his hand. So if he checks to me and there's 100 in the pot, no, we're going way too far here. We're assuming I'm raising, he's calling, and right. No one else is in the hand. But if that's what happens.
You know, the reason I'm bringing it up is because I'm starting to think a couple streets down with this. And in this situation, I am going to call myself. Just because I want to disguise my tens, I totally agree with you, are very much higher than his normal range. So I think I have the best hand here. Not too excited about letting the blinds in, like you said, but I'd rather conceal that I have some strength here and let him try to hang himself rather than try to be the aggressor here and be outplayed by someone knowing that I don't really play well against aggressive players.
Well, what I'm asking you then, how does that change anything with your scenario of him with low cards and you just called him, now he's flopped a pair?
What it changes is I'm not committing an extra $40 pre-flop.
Right, but you're also
my option to see how the hand plays out without committing $40 and putting myself in a situation where I'm either going to need to make a continuation bet, which at that point is going to be fairly significant, or check behind and look weak and lose control of the hand and then be probably put to a very big test on the turn.
Well, I think you've lost control of the hand by just calling no matter what now.
Because I agree, raise, but so. I've lost control of the hand, but at a reduced price.
Well, I'm trying to make money, Scott. I'm trying to make money in this game.
At $50 rather than $10.
I'm trying to make money in this game. I'm not trying to save money.
Oh, I am too.
You're trying to save money.
I'm trying to set a trap here and do it at a cheap price. I think...
But you're not trapping anyone the way you're playing it. You're not trapping him for anything. You're calling his bet at his amount, and then you're passive the rest of the way. And
I'm not saying passive the rest of the way.
Well, when would you pop alive when
I'm
it comes all
if
unders?
I just call here. There's no expectation on me to put any kind of bet in on the flop. When I raise him to 50 here, there is an expectation that I need to put some more money in, and if I don't, that's a signal to him that he can fire at me on the turn, which maybe I want. You know, again, if I flop a set here and check, or if I get a flop that I feel is comfortable, that's fine. But mm-hmm. At this point, I am not letting him know how strong I am here. Now, I wouldn't normally do that against another player, but against a super aggressive, this is the kind of hand I want, and this is the way I normally want to play it.
Well, the beauty in the raise to me is that, again, this guy is thinking... The only way this guy is raising me is because he thinks he has a big hand, and it's the only way he could play against me being an aggro like this. So I can represent so many flops now. And if it comes all unders, I think I'm ahead. Just because he might have 7-8 and he flops an 8, you know, or a 7-8, doesn't mean that, one, I'm going to be completely behind the rest of the hand. I can make another two pair. I can still turn a set. I can make a straight somehow. So, I mean, there are baby cards still fit into that 10 if they're under those 10s.
Right.
If they're
okay,
under.
Let me ask you this, too. Now, we talked about you representing the ace, which I think makes perfect sense, right? Mm-hmm. If I was super aggressive, and the ones that I've watched play, they use their stack to make you make bad decisions or put the fear of God in you, right?
Right.
Or the fear of Darwin. I threw the fear of God in there for Dr. Frank. So, you know, if the ace does come and we're reps in, and maybe ace king, you know, a legitimate hand, we put our bet in there, he could easily throw all 850 or whatever he has left in there and then really make us put a test for, you know, hey, do I really want to call off 350 or whatever I have here with top pair, top kicker? Generally speaking, a lot of players probably will, but there are going to be some players that go, you know what, it's not worth my whole stack for top pair, top kicker. That's the real advantage of super aggressive, I think, is being able to play no matter what the flop comes.
No, I mean, that is a possibility. I don't know if this guy's going to risk $325 when you've re-raised him with a big hand. It's not like it sounds to me that his aggro style is working against passive players who are just limping and calling, and then he's shoving on them, and he can tell they're tight. If you're being aggressive at him, you're telling him you have a hand, you're ready to go to battle with it. And if this guy is going to shove on you after you have a huge hand and big cards come out and you bet, I don't think he's going to do that to you. You're giving him every indication that you have high cards, a big hand, and you've hit this flop. Now, how is he going to push you off that hand? If I have big cards, let's say I had pocket aces and I flop an ace and I got three aces and I bet. If he believes I have aces, he's not going to shove into me with a set or even ace king. Because he knows that I'm sitting there waiting for him to make a mistake or waiting to pick up a hand to play against him. So now that I have my hand and I've hit it, how is he going to shove against me? I think he's doing it against passive players, not against someone who's being aggressive with him.
Okay.
I mean, that's just how I mean, again, I'm reading into this huge thing. We don't even know who this person is. We've known, like, one detail so far.
We haven't decided what we're doing yet.
Yeah, so I'm raising. I'm definitely – I think I have to isolate this guy and show him that I have a hand and then represent whatever comes on the flop, whether it's low or high.
Okay. All right. Well, our hero says, with both blinds still yet to act, I decided to just call. I really don't want to open the betting again and risk being four bet by Mr. Aggro and feel like I can outplay this guy after the flop. Small blind calls. And he says this player has been seated almost the whole time I've been at the table. Oh, he's calling. I'm wondering why he's telling us that the guy pulled it. Okay, I'm sorry. The small blind calls. And that player had been seated the whole time at this table. He's a somewhat tight 30-something-year-old player that plays a few hands, but when he gets involved, can be quite aggressive as well. The just call is somewhat surprising, but I feel like he's thinking the same as me. Wants to see a flop, and this particular guy has us covered, but only by a small amount. He has 350. The big blind folds. Pot is $29. We are three-handed, and the flop comes ace of diamonds, jack of clubs, ten of hearts. And this is weird. I thought you said we're on the button, didn't he?
That's what I thought you said. Folds back to me on the button.
Says I'm first to act. He says he's first to act, so something's wrong here. Sorry, Nick.
Yeah, that's not right.
All right, but assuming we're first to act, so...
Because he says he's first to act?
Yeah, he's first to act on this.
Yeah, something's not right.
So he must have been out of position pre-flop and just limped and then... Sorry, Nick. I'll read this better next time. All right, but assuming he's first to act now, what do you do?
Well, here's the deal. I mean, you have to bet your set and you have to represent those cards. The problem is now you got another player in the hand, and what are the calling hands that guy has? He has hands like paint and small pairs, so either he's going to be, as we always say, way behind or way ahead of us. He could have king queen, you know, and that's the problem. Even the aggro guy could have king queen, but, you know, I mean, we should be way ahead here, but we're not necessarily way ahead, and now we have four cards that we're going against instead of two. So I'm definitely going to bet. I'm probably going to bet, you know, close to the pot, you know, like $25. Because I want to see what happens. I mean, the way I would have played it would have been different. See, now if we were last to act, we wouldn't have to worry about this. But we're first to act now, which is weird. I don't know what's going on here. So, I'm still going to bet it and see if this guy comes alive, the aggro guy. But something's not right with this. There's something wrong with this hand. But if I do bet, it's $25 probably.
Yeah, I think 25. What I like about the 25 too is that's a bet usually that you put out there at a 1-3 game because you feel your hand is vulnerable.
Right.
And I guess technically your hand is vulnerable here, but it's much stronger than I think people put it on. I think that would be a bet that somebody would put out with just a naked ace maybe.
Yeah.
And so it builds the pot up and makes maybe makes you look a little weaker than you really are. All right, well, our hero decides to act. His first act with two aggressive players behind him, he decides to check. Small blind checks his... Wow, this is so weird. I don't know where the... How the small blind is next here.
Sounds weird.
The next player checks, and the aggro player bets $30.
Hmm. Okay, well, I'm just going to call. I want to see what the turn brings before I come alive, I guess. Because this hand isn't playing the way it was. If I'm in position, you know what I mean? Everybody's acting before me, and then I can act, and but this is not what's happening. We're acting first now, so I'm kind of confused, so I don't know what to think now. This is totally being played under protest, this hand now. So I'm filing the papers with the league right now. I'm going to call the 30, because if I don't know what the small blind has now. That's kind of confusing me. Yeah. I don't know what to do now. I'm just going to call, probably wait till the turn.
Okay, that's what we do. The other player calls as well, too. We remain three-handed. Pot is 118 now, and the turn is the four of spades. So our board now is ace of diamonds, jack of clubs, ten of hearts, four of spades. And on this turn, we are first act yet again.
Yeah, I'll check. I'll see what happens.
Really?
Yeah,
not because I know we're all confused here, but...
I'm just not sure what's going on in this hand now. And the small blind calling that 30, it smells really fishy. Like,
yeah, yeah.
He could have pocket jacks, he could have king queen. I don't think he has pocket aces, obviously.
I mean, this is a perfect hand for king queen because there's no there's absolutely no flush possibilities
now.
No,
exactly.
Four suits on four of the cards out there.
The only thing you could possibly worry about now is pairing the board if you're the king queen, so why not just milk these aggressive people? Because he's seen this aggressive guy shove. So he's hoping to just see this guy shove and not make any move, I think. So that if he has king queen, then we're screwed. So we need to board the pair. I'm just gonna check.
All right, that's exactly what our hero does, and our non-aggressive opponent comes to life and bets $60.
Well, he said they were both aggressive at one point. He said two aggressive.
The lesser of the aggressive.
The lesser of the two aggros.
Bet 60, Mr. Aggressive tanks before eventually folding, and it gets back to us.
See, that's exactly it. Well, why
kind of screaming king queen now,
yeah, what could he possibly... I mean, unless he thinks he's... You know, he had two pair, and he was waiting for the aggro guy to bet. But he did bet, and he didn't raise him, so now it sounds like he's milking it. So he's got to have the nuts. I think I'm... God, you know what? I can't imagine folding a set, though. You know?
It's tough.
I can't imagine folding a set. You got 10 outs still.
In there, so 60 for 178, so like a 3-1.
Yeah, and you got 10 outs to win, which is you need 4-1 on your money for that, right? But you're close, and you know if he does have Broadway in the board pairs, you might get a lot of money off him. So
yeah, there are some implied odds here. Yes,
yeah, so I might call. Knowing he has king queen likely, you know, I mean it's only one hand that. You know what I mean? There's only one hand that beats us.
I mean, here's the thing. If this is a higher level reasonable game, then I'm a little bit more scared of the king-queen. I mean, I think it's king-queen. You think it's king-queen. But a 1-3, I mean, somebody can be making this with a wide range of hands. Not wide range, but hands that we have beat here, too. So it's possible.
Ace-jack is very likely because of the fact that he only called a raise, hits two ace-jacks, wait for... It's his two pair, I mean, aces and jacks. Waits for the guy to bet, does, and then just calls, thinking that he's still trapping the guy. Then, but with the four, why did he come alive with the four? Because it still only puts a fourth suit on the board, so no flush is possible. Why did he come alive now? Maybe he's afraid he's not going to get any more money. I don't know. Why did he come alive now with that four? But aces and jacks could be possible. Ace-queen sounds like a re-raising hand, or ace-king.
Yeah.
Ace-10, that's only one pair. I don't know if he'd all of a sudden bet 60 with one pair. So.
Well, it'd be two pair in the flop.
Oh, that's right. There's a 10 on the flop. Yeah, R10. The case 10, though, that's less likely.
Case 10.
Yeah,
exactly.
So really, it does feel like king queen. Kind of weird. Feels like king queen now.
All right, so our hero says, I don't think he has a set of aces or jacks because he would have raised pre-flop. So it's either a big ace, ace king, ace queen, ace jack, ace 10, or a king queen. I have five of those six hands beat, so I call. Pot is 238, and our river is the seven of clubs. So our final board is ace of diamonds, jack of clubs, ten of hearts, four of spades, seven of clubs. Hard to imagine the seven of clubs did anything.
Boo.
But we are first act for three out of the four streets.
All right, well, I guess I'll check again. See if he's afraid. Like, maybe he thinks we have king, queen, he has ace, jack, and he might check it behind.
He just wants to quit down, shut down here. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's what we do, and this time our opponent bets 150.
Yeah, I can't call that, which is set. I mean, I can't. It's, I mean, not a ton of hands beat us, but not a ton of hands can make that bet either.
Exactly.
So I think even if you have two pair, it's not.
Very tough.
Yeah, I would check. So if you bet 150, I would have to fold.
All right. And he says, ugh. Not sure I can get away from this. I still feel big ace, probably ace jack, which I have beat. But I think about shoving, but with 250, I already committed. My raise of 75 probably wouldn't push him out. I think that's very smart. I call, and he rolls over king, queen of clubs.
Yeah.
The flop straight.
Yeah.
Gulp. Sorday says, actually, I'm the 30-something in the small blind. I was somewhat surprised the button called my raise because as soon as I pushed out, I thought he had gotten a little greedy on my value bet. It was one of the bigger pots I won.
That explains why he keeps saying he's first to act.
Yep.
Because he was really the small blind, and he's confusing himself, and he's trying to be tricky, and he blew the whole thing.
He blew the cover.
Oh, my God. We knew something was wrong. See, a good poker player could smell something fishy going on there. That was pretty bad there, buddy. Sorry, Nick.
Yeah, you're not going to be writing untraceable two for Chris.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know if we're going to be able to give you our swag today, because that you put us through the ringer, and you screwed it up bad, man. You know, we don't ask for much on this show. You know, we don't make you pay to listen. We give away free stuff. The least you can do is get the details correct in your hand. And when you're trying to be tricky, be extra careful to get your details correct. Thank you.
Here's the thing, though. I'm feeling charitable because I wasted an entire show on Meech last week. So I am still going to send Nick a deck of J-Design playing cards, the official playing cards of Anti-Up. Pick up your own decks in the Anti-Up store at antiupstore.com. And remember to email your hands of the week and the proper details to podcast at antiupmagazine.com.
Hey, thanks for recording the show this week with Lee so that we'd have a show this week. Appreciate the main topic there, Lee. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Logg.
Happy Thanksgiving. We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.